This is an ABC podcast.
Hello. My name is Lisa Leong, and I am a workaholic. It's been one day since my last 12-hour day. Today, we're here for a session of High Achievers Anonymous. Welcome to Pause Fest, your business and creativity festival. Step one of your road to recovery. I want you to find your phones, please. Show me your phones. Now you need to switch them off. Yeah. I want you to do it right now, so show me, please. I need you to switch off these phones. Does anyone not know how to switch off their phone? Now I want you to hold hands. Yeah. We're doing this, people. Just take a deep breath in. Deep breath out. Do you know what that is? Anxiety. That. I want you to sit with that discomfort, okay? Because how rare is it to switch off our phones? We're asking you to do it for 40 minutes, and yet you're laughing anxiously at me, right? Feels a bit weird. But this is part of it, because we need your full attention as we break down the myth of work-life balance and we explore the possibilities of work-life integration. Shall I introduce you to our wonderful panel here today? We have Ed McManus. Now, Ed, did you know he was a medical researcher and he started off in oncology, but he got lost along the way and he's got a myriad of titles to his CV now. He's been the CEO and he's been the GM of multiple companies, but he is now the CEO of on-demand food delivery business, Deliveroo. Now, there's something that you should know about Ed, in that he is a workaholic. So, Ed, you've come to the right place. Welcome, Ed. And now we have Natalie Feehan. Natalie, this is a bit of a radio reunion because you know Ed. You work together?
I do. We did work together and I've worked with James as well.
And you've worked with James as well. So Natalie also has a smattering of senior executive roles and currently she's the GM of sales and marketing at MYOB. So thank you very much, Natalie.
Thank you.
James Law has been a people person for 15 years. You've also been at various places, including Invato, and you're now the Chief of Staff at Estimate One. Welcome, James. Now, I announced that I am a workaholic. Are you a workaholic too, Ed?
Well, you said I was in the intro. I probably am. Maybe it's an outdated word, but I would perhaps describe it differently, but work is very important to me. I'm internally very competitive. I'm externally very competitive. I'll make a lot of sacrifice to be the very best I can be at whatever I do, and work is a big part of my life. So, yeah, I suppose by any definition, it's true. I am a workaholic.
I'm exhausted listening to that. Natalie.
Am I a workaholic?
Mm. You are.
Thank you. I think I would. I like to think of myself as a lifeaholic. There you go.
Oh.
I don't know if there's any elements that I don't sort of, I don't know. I just like making the most of every minute and a lot of that's work. I just love working as well. So I think, you know, I do what's enjoyable and it just happens that I love work and have been really fortunate to work with great people in great companies. So that makes it easy.
Yep, you're also in the right place. James?
I don't think I am, unfortunately.
No,
I wish
no,
I was. I'm inherently lazy. but I do think I like work and work's a big part of my life. But anything over a certain amount of hours a week and my efficiency drops significantly and I'm starting to work out that it's not that valuable to work beyond those levels of efficiency to the point where I'm not doing a great job.
By the way, I don't think it's just about hours. I mean, I think it's what you're thinking about when you're in the shower or what you're thinking about as you're driving or doing other things. So Maybe we'll come back to you, James. But what's the cost? Yeah, there's cost. But I'm happy. It's a choice. I mean, I don't have to do it. And nor does anyone else. There's cost to I'm married with three young kids. And there's undoubtedly at times cost to my marriage. And there's undoubtedly at times cost to the relationship I have with my three children and some friends. But, you know, we all have choices. And I think it's about carefully considering. I'm now giving some advice that I got that I never took, which is the best sort of advice. But you got to sit down, you know, maybe if you're younger in your career and really think about what's important in life and make active decisions about where you draw the line between work and other things. And for me, that line was always drawn over towards one side. But, you know, I could change that tomorrow if I wanted to.
So let's talk about that, what you're talking about, the line. So we start with this concept of work-life balance. Mm-hmm. What is that to you?
For me, it means trying to be the best you can be in your life outside of work, balancing that with your work life, but it's tremendously difficult. I find it difficult and I fail at the balance all the time.
Natalie? I think that's the challenge with the word work-life balance, is it inherently says that you've got two equal things that you need to kind of balance out. And it's impossible if you spend your life trying to balance those two things out evenly. I think you're going to tie yourself in knots and be incredibly stressed. The way that I like to think about it, and the reason that I prefer the words work-life integration, is that, you know, on that balance of scales, there's going to be times where you can give more to work or that work needs more, and there's going to be times when your family or the other things in life need more, and so you need to put more energy there. So the nice shift from work-life balance means that they're not two separate things that you're trying to balance. Work-life integration is about balancing your whole life.
Do you think work-life balance is dead?
Yes.
I think it's just life now. And one thing that I've learnt to do is become more effective in shorter moments so that I can work my life into my day, as opposed to have a set of work hours and a set of life hours, so that there are times where you can do things that I normally wouldn't have done in 15 minutes, blocks between, you know, giving a child a bottle and watching the cricket. And that has allowed for me to focus more on my life than a balance of anything, and has helped me a lot.
So when I think about work-life integration, lines are blurred. It is just one thing, and maybe the mobile phones are an example of that, because you can basically have your work with you after hours. Do you consciously think about work-life integration?
So, look, I've got three young kids and I love my career. I've got what I think is a successful career, and I think I'm also a pretty good mum. Other people might think otherwise. But work-life integration enables me to do both of those things. So I feel incredibly grateful for the opportunities that I've got to be really happy at work and really happy at home. And I don't think you necessarily had that before technology enabled it. You know, the thing that we've got to be conscious of is with work-life integration comes, and it's self-discipline, but you can be working whenever you want to. So I think the thing that we need to be thinking about as a society is the impact of work-life integration for people who need the mental space and those health breaks and, you know, to de-stress, and being always on is okay. I don't mind being always on. It doesn't cause stress in my life, actually. I actually quite enjoy it. But we do need to be able to switch off or mentally compartmentalise and, you know, be healthy. So we have to be conscious of the choices that we're making in that integration, not letting it just overrun.
And so when you're consciously integrating it, how often are you managing it? Like, are you just pausing in the moment and thinking?
Oh, I don't think I manage it very well at all. Like, you ask my husband and it drives him mental that I sit at the kitchen bench and type on my laptop or I'm on my phone. But, I mean, I'm consciously getting better at least trying to be present. So, and especially with kids and things like that. So, you know, it's to Ed's point, it's all about choices. So I know when I get home at night, I need to be present. So I try really hard now to leave all of the devices in another room. The reality is the type of work that I do in terms of sales and marketing and looking after people is I'm not doing anything that actually requires me right there and then to be there. Like, I can't kid myself that the company is that dependent on my skill set that those couple of hours where I'm switching off are going to be life or death for the company, right? It's just ridiculous. But sometimes I have to remind myself of that too. It sounds crazy. But it's okay to put it away. But work-life integration, so I'll give you an example. Last night, so often in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock, I can't sleep and I'll check emails and do some emails and drives my husband mental again.
Great balance.
But I kind of like it. I can't sleep anyway. I'm thinking about work. So kind of why not? And then people say, oh, you shouldn't email your staff at, you know, strange hours of the night. It's not fair on them. I don't expect a response from them. And work-life integration, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But maybe I would. But you can't tell people to integrate work-life and then put boundaries around when they can and can't work, right? If you want me to have work-life integration and I'll work when I can and be absent at other times, well, then let me work the way that I want to work. So I think that's the dilemma where in the moment is we're stuck between these two worlds where we want to put some boundaries around it but say integrate in this way.
Can we talk about the leadership shadow? So from a balcony view, is work-life integration really just for managers, or do you see everyone really sort of grappling with this, and is this for everyone?
I think it's the teams that I'm involved in, it's for everyone. And I think, you know, we've had some good examples on technology. I think it means other things too. There's a flexibility element of if you've got to drop kids off or attend to a family member who's sick or be at home because a tradie is coming, or, you know, a whole list of things, then that's it. That's work-life integration to me. By the way, I hadn't heard of the term, I have to admit, until this panel. So I think that those things are important, and certainly people I work with, I allow that as a given, but I expect a lot back. I expect a lot back. So if I'm giving you the flexibility to do things in your life that you have to do in what traditionally would be deemed normal work hours, that's fine, but there has to be trust, and I expect a lot back. And I make no apologies.
When you say you expect a lot back, do you expect more back because you're giving them that flexibility? Or
I think I expect... So I expect the work to be done and I expect flexibility back, by which I mean sometimes there'll be times where I'll say, hey, I'm sorry... Maybe I don't apologise. I'll say, this has to be done and it's the Sunday. It just has to be done.
Yep.
And I expect that, you know, not that if this is every Sunday it's different, but I expect that on those occasions you'll do it because it's a two-way thing. Yeah. And I think probably... actually where we've got to in this corporate sphere, it feels often a bit one way. So companies are telling people, employees, you can do this, and you can have this. You know what? That's partly true, but it's not quite true. I think if people are ambitious and people want to do really well and people want to be the best that they can be in a field, you put yourself at a real disadvantage if you are working 2 days a week from home, just as an example. Right. Now, that's the truth. And it might not be a convenient truth, but it's the truth. And there are all sorts of reasons for that. We were talking about it outside over coffee. Often what happens is I'll think of something and I'll stand up from my desk. I don't have an office. And I'll just talk to the first person I see. Right. Now, that's wrong. But it's not going to change. Because I'll just think, now, who can I talk to about this? Who can I bounce that idea off? And I'll pick whoever I see. And unfortunately, if you're not there couple of days a week, and this goes to part-time as well as flexible, right? Over time, that comes at a cost to you. And I'd love to find ways around that, but I don't know what the ways are. And so all these things, look, flexibility, work-life integration, all that's all great. And as I said, you know, I hope I'm not giving the wrong impression. If people come to me and they need to do things in their life, 100%, I often say, you don't even need to ask me.
Oh, yeah,
but over time, I think that there is a cost. There's an unspoken cost because these things have a downside. I think it's important to talk about them.
Do you think it's a cultural aspect of the places that where you're a leader that means that people who work from flexibly or work from home more than regularly are less likely to develop in their careers?
I'm a really nice manager. I'm saying it in general.
Quick show of hands?
No. We have people who work flexibly. There's no problem with that.
But you're saying their career is not going to go as far as someone who doesn't.
Maybe it will. But on average, it has to come at a cost is all I'm saying.
And if why does it have to come at a cost?
Because I think you've got... If you're working flexibly and you're competing internally or externally with the 32-year-old me... You're in trouble.
What about the future of work where everyone's working flexibly?
Well, no, because I will never work flexibly.
Maybe you're not, the future of work yet.
Look, I might be wrong. I'm trying to be honest. I think average, it's something people have to consider and think people should think about.
They should definitely consider it and not work for Ed.
You know, to your point, I think there are a number of companies who have given a lot and now they're saying it actually doesn't work for the company, right? And it's got to work. At the end of the day, it's an exchange, right? It is two ways, and it's got to benefit the company, your team, and then the individual. And that's sort of the language that we use internally is that flexibility is great, but it's not just to meet the needs of the individual. You've got to be meeting the company needs to be the priority in that, your team, and then we hope to also make it work for you individually. And the reason that flexibility is such a good thing in the workplace is when done well and when done in a way where the exchange is clear and understood and can be mutually beneficial, is you're getting the best outcome for both the company and for the individual. And for so many individuals, their needs are so different. And so what that is about is the flexibility to enable people to be their best. And I think if you can approach flexibility with that mindset, you know, that's a great outcome for everyone.
Spot on. And I think one of the things we didn't do at Envato, which I regret, is set those expectations more clearly and maintain a focus on output and measuring output rather than just trusting output. Because what happened was whenever anything went wrong, people pointed to the fact that people were working remotely. That was the problem. That was the reason we didn't deliver. That was the reason we didn't achieve that goal. It was always the problem, rather than looking at individuals not performing or not being given the right information to do their job or the right tools or the right guidance or the right coaching. It was always about the policy, not the people or what they had to do their job. And so setting clearly articulated expectations, which Ed does, and helping people understand the good and the bad about what is required when you opt into doing something like working remotely is critical. One of the things I think that people talk a lot about when they talk about flexibility is trust. And I think that that's overused and overemphasized. I think transparency is actually more important. So I think transparency around what you're working on and how you're going and how it's tracking enables two things. It enables collaboration and it stops people thinking you're not working. So those things help the relationship and help the culture of flexibility more than assuming trust, because people betray trust. That's what happens, right? Like, not everyone is going to be working at the effective levels required of them to do their job if they're not in the office. That's just a fact. So rather than constantly thinking about, is that person working hard enough, you can see it. So whatever way you're tracking your work, you can see what they're working on and how it's going, and that enables people to not worry about whether people are working or not, because they can see it.
And if you've just joined us here on RN This Working Life, we're coming to you from PauseFest. I'm Lisa Leong, and with me to deep dive into work-life integration, Egmond Manus, representing Always On CEOs of the world. We have Natalie Feehan, spokesperson for senior management, and people person James Law. Let's talk about the personal effects of attempting work-life integration. Natalie, you've got a fast-fail story for us about when it hasn't quite worked out for you.
We move house a lot. We renovate a lot. My husband does, and we move a lot. And I'd organised movers, and then I think that night I'd been up until about midnight, you know, just moving the rest of the things, and the settlement was the next day. And so I was on my way to work, and I had to stop by the house. It had all been emptied to let the cleaners in and leave the key under the door, because settlement was on that day. And I had this big presentation at work. So we had Culture Day, which was when we invite all our new employees to come and hear the strategy, and I was delivering the strategy. So I get to the house, I open the door. All good, except my daughter's goldfish was still there. So there's this fish tank on the bench. And I'm thinking, oh, what do I do with these goldfish? And I had to be in the office in like 40 minutes to deliver this big strategy presentation. So keep in mind, the whole house is empty and you've got this fish tank with it full of water. So it's really heavy. So I've got to sort of take off all my clothes and start trying to shovel the water out of the fish tank. And then I end up in the car with this fish tank that's sort of half full of water, and I can't put it on the seat because the water's rocking and I'm worried the fish are going to die. So I'm driving down the freeway with a... This is terrible. Don't tell anybody. But I was driving down a side street with a fish tank on my lap. The traffic was horrendous. And so I'm covered in fish water. I've got this fish tank on my lap. And I had like 10 minutes to get there. And I knew I wasn't going to make it. So I ended up having to pull over on the side of the road. And unbeknown to obviously the people who watched this strategy presentation from one of their executives, I was in the car, I hung my jacket up behind me so it looked like a black kind of background. I set my laptop on the dash, and I kept a really straight face and delivered this presentation via video conference. And little did they know that I was sitting in the car with these fish on my lap, covered in fish water.
That's
so
great.
So there's a fail.
Ed, you got a time when work-life integration didn't quite work out for you?
I probably have regular mini fails. I've gotten better over the years. So if you go back 6-7 years, I would answer text messages and emails under the table while having dinner. And
can I tell a story about that? I remember you were so proud of yourself when you got your first Apple Watch because his wife didn't know.
I don't know. maybe it's true.
So I can do my messaging.
But look, I learned the hard way, lots of little fails, and I've had no major failures, you know, in terms of major issues in life. But that's a terrible thing to do. And so it sounds simple, but when I arrive home, my phone goes away for a while.
How long?
An hour.
Yeah.
An hour. I'll be doing things, you know, 7-8, and the kids will be there, and the kids will be wanting my attention. And, you know, sometimes you get a bit frustrated, which is terrible. So those are the little fails. One thing I do is I plug my phone in at night in the kitchen. I have an old 90s-style alarm clock. You know, the digital ones with the red light? I have one of those. It works perfectly well. But, because for me, having the phone there would be crossing the line.
How do you set boundaries, Natalie?
Yeah, I have. One of the things I've become far more conscious of, you know, we talk about leadership shadows, but actually as a sort of parent or motherhood shadow. Mm. So my kids are 10, 7 and a 1-year-old. Actually, she's just turned 2. But I started to realise that their normal was me with a device in my hand. Mm. And I've sort of become much more disciplined to that point about not always having a device, because my 1-year-old always wanted a device in her hand. So she constantly wanted to be holding a phone. And so I think it's about, again, just thinking about you know, the impact that you're having and the example that you're setting. Now, the example that I'm setting for my kids that I'm really proud of is that it's possible to be a loving, great mum, but also to have a successful career. But I want them to make sure that they get the loving mum part, not at the cost of the work and thinking that I love the work more than them.
Now, a final word from each of you for someone starting out in their career who dreams of making it to the top of their chosen field. James.
Just a small question to finish up with. Great. I think be as genuine as you can be, because you'll get caught up making up a persona that's not really you if you try and kid everyone around you that you're something you're not. I remember once I had some feedback that I needed to be more urgent. I needed to show more urgency. So I spent 6 months being urgent. it was frightening, and until someone came up to me and said, "What the hell is wrong with you? You're buzzing around like a fly, and it's really weird." So that was a good insight into not trying to be something you're not, because it'll catch you out in the end.
Yeah, so for me, remembering that life is a choice. It's about the values and what you want to do with your life. And I think from a work perspective, be really clear with your manager and the people around you about the expectations, right? So what good looks like to you, asking your manager what looks good from them. Because if people are misaligned on the expectation, you can never be great. So what does great look like? And then just deliver that to that.
Ed.
Make an active decision about what you want out of life and where the line or the blurred line sits for you. And if whatever you decide, don't die wondering, because you didn't give it everything, if that's what you decide to do.
We're going to do some questions and answers right now. And Magic is on the mic.
Everybody who asks a question gets an old school Radio National sticker. They're collectible. They're from circa 1974. You can put them on your parents' car. And a Radio National bookmark.
Oh, bookmark.
These are also collectible because we've changed our logo. So does anyone have a question?
G'day, that was a really interesting discussion with multiple different views. So Ed, like, you really freaked me out with what you had to say. I'm a business owner myself, and I've made a decision as a business owner, which is, I guess, in line with my values, is that flexibility is a really big value of mine. And I feel really pleased when my team might say, oh, Ilanthi, I've got really bad cramps today, so I need to stay home. Or they feel like they're able to express to me chinks in their mental health, and I really want to create a working environment, yeah, where people are able to be who they want to be. And it just really worried me, the idea that physical presence was always going to be linked to being able to go further in your career. And I don't run a Deliveroo, but I really hope that we're able to build a world that doesn't have that attitude. It's more of a comment than anything. I respect as a CEO.
Well, I think there's thanks for the question. I think there's certainly a distinction between when somebody comes with whatever issue and needs to have some time here or there. I think that's different to someone who decides they will work 3 days a week and one of those days at home. There's a difference between those two things, right? And by the way, in my organization and organizations I've run in the past, I've had both. All I'm saying is, in some scenarios, the latter could be damaging, depending on the sort of contract you may or may not have with your direct manager. I wouldn't want to give the impression that we can't have a world where flexibility doesn't exist. And we talked about mental health. One of the things I have discovered as I've run organizations, you get exposed to a lot more things. And it's surprising and worrying how many people are dealing with things, as you probably know. Like, we're not talking about 5% of the population. It's a much bigger percentage. But, you know, in life, unfortunately, it would be a mistake to think that you can have your cake and eat it always in all scenarios. And all I'm saying is you've got to be very, very careful and explore what the cost might be.
And another question.
Hi, my question's to Ed. I just want to acknowledge and say thank you for your really refreshing, honest answer that you gave previously. I think that you articulated a taboo around flexibility in the workplace, particularly for working mums. I'm one of those and I have a young child. And I think that what you articulated is absolutely part of the problem that contributes to the gender gap at work. So my question is, what are you going to do differently as a leader now that you've articulated that you act in a particular way that may be detrimental to other individuals?
Yep, great question, thank you. So things I've done in the past for working mums returning to work is, as they've transitioned, I've had this several times, someone's come back 2 days, I've paid 3 days. As they've come back 4 days, I've paid full time. Because in reality, often those people are doing things flexibly late at night when kids are in bed, all that, but they're probably working the output of someone else who's 5 days, so you might as well be paid for 5 days. So I'd encourage anyone to have that conversation. The other thing that's very important, and I think and another contributing factor to the gender gap, and we are really into anecdotal territory, but my overwhelming anecdotal experience is, let's say the example is it comes to pay review time. Most of the time you say, well, here's your pay review and it's X percent, it's, you know, a 2% increase. On balance, the ledger has shifted. You get one response from men and one response from women. And the women, on average, mostly, not all women, just so we're all clear, on average, will say, thank you very much. And the men will say, yeah, it's all right, I was hoping for a bit more. Right, now, I don't want to get into why that is. I don't know why that is, but that's my overwhelming experience. Other people may have different views. And I think the responsibility, you're asking what I would do, is to break through that and say, hey, actually, you know, you need to be more assertive. And I spoke to someone the other day who was going for a big role in a big company that used to work for me, a woman who used to work for me, came, talked to me about my advice, and she went through the conversation with this executive recruiter, and she relayed the conversation. She had said to the executive recruiter, hey, you know, I'm of the things they're looking for, I can do this, but I don't have this experience here, so maybe it's not for me. And the executive recruiter said, you know what, no man ever says that. The men will say, I can do it, don't worry. That thing over there, yes, sort of got that experience. Actually, here's some bullshit story. I'll think about it. Right, now some people won't, I mean, it's on the controversial edge for a man to be saying this, but it's my overwhelming experience is what people tell me. And I think it's the responsibility of all managers, men and women, to help
women through that?
The first time I went on maternity leave, when I went back, I would say that in exchange for flexibility, I was almost willing to do more and accept less. So I think women as well need to remember that their value is based on what they're delivering and the results they're generating. And, you know, accept that if somebody's offering them flexibility, that it's okay. Like, you know, third time round, probably I'd got it a little bit more right in understanding that, you know, if I'm coming back to work 3 days, that that's perfectly fine and I'll build up or whatever it is. But I do think that there's an attitudinal thing in there about flexibility in exchange for something else. And stop, doesn't have to be that way.
Stop individuals having to negotiate salary. That is the easiest way. You pay a certain amount of money for a certain role, whether you're male, female, doesn't matter.
That's true, James. But I mean, at the end of the day, there'll be people like me who, well, I'd never do this now if, in case my current employer is listening. But over the years, I've gone, well, that's fine, James, but guess what? I'm going. And you know what happens? The Jameses of the world say, oh, all right, Ed, here's what we'll do for you.
No, not anymore. I
know some of your companies you've worked at have had that policy, and that's a great policy, by the way, and that's probably the way it should be, right? But it's not the way it is in 99% of cases. So guess what? Most of you are dealing with the other model. I totally agree if we could get there.
Oh, and we've got a question over here. Thanks.
Thanks. My question's for James. You were talking about having a lot of staff sort of working from home and how that's that great flexibility there. But sometimes it would cause issues because if something did go wrong or expectations weren't met, that these people were sort of brought up by maybe those that, you know, weren't doing that. And you said sort of the best way to sort of combat that or get around that is that transparency. So I'm just sort of thinking, what sort of structures did you have in place or mechanisms to ensure that you had that transparency there?
Great question. Yeah, I mean, Agile helps. Agile methodology to software delivery or doing anything where you've got things like stand-ups and you've broken down work into pieces and you've got Kanban boards that show who's working on what and when. But if you don't have all that, it's just a way to transparently show what you're working on and where you're up to. And that might be an email, a message, a spreadsheet. It doesn't have to be a flash bit of technology. It can be anything that helps people understand where you're at so that they can contribute and they can support you and help you and guide you. And also, they don't have to worry about the fact that you're not working just because you're not in the office.
A quick one as well. Do you think that you could lead teams remotely?
Yes.
You can be a leader.
Yeah, I do. I really think you can. I think you've got to have the right environment, the right culture, the right setup, the right tools, all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, there's no reason. I think if you are building a company and you are doing certain things at certain times or you're not delivering, you might need to restrict that and bring everyone back to have high fidelity in-person conversations, because I personally think they're still easier and better.
But depends on the company.
Yeah.
If you're managing a restaurant, you're going to be more effective if you're there watching your staff.
True. Yeah, I think it also depends on the maturity and level of the team members, because all of us, I believe, when we're younger, you need more face-to-face manager contact. And as you get a bit older and more experienced, you need less. So I think it depends. It should be possible, but depends.
Beautiful. Thank you very much to our panel.
Hey, quick. Quick.
Ed McManus is CEO of Deliverer Australia, Natalie Fan, GM at MYOB, and people person with Estimate One, James Law. May work-life balance rest in peace, but may we find peace in work-life integration. You can put your phones back on, you can breathe collective relief at doing that. Thanks to all of our guests today again. I'm Lisa Leong. This Working Life is produced by Maria Magic Tickle at all hours of the day and night and all sorts of places as well. You can listen to us anytime, anywhere by subscribing to our podcast. Please rate and review. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next week, keep working.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.